So taking agenda paper 19 to start with, which is the cover paper, paragraphs 3 to 11 are just a reminder of the origins of this research project and provide a summary of the work the staff have performed since the project was activated in 2018. In particular, at its September 2019 meeting, the board discussed the potential effects, if any, on the analysis and proposals in the 2010 discussion paper as a result of standards and amendments and other board documents issued since the publication of the discussion paper and changes to the reserve and resource classification systems and other initiatives such as publish what you pay and sustainability reporting. And at that meeting, the board asked staff to perform additional outreach in other jurisdictions, having initially asked for feedback from the national standard setters whose staff contributed to the development of the discussion paper, and to perform additional research activities in order to be able to determine, firstly, what problems, if any, entities with extractive activities have applying IFRS standards, and then secondly, whether the primary users of financial statements of entities with extractive activities are obtaining all the information they need for these entities. So the staff's now completed these additional research activities, and paragraph 12 in this paper details the staff plan to present our findings in the coming months, and also agenda paper 19A for this meeting is the first of those papers. And I can see Siobhan is there now, so I shall now hand over to Siobhan, who will take us through agenda paper 19A.
Apologies for being late. So agenda paper 19A. Paragraphs 12 to 15 discuss our approach to seeking feedback about extractive activities from other jurisdictions and from other stakeholder groups. We think it's really important to note that the questions we prepared for this outreach were aimed at gathering evidence about whether there is a accounting for exploration and evaluation expenditure, whether there are wider problems accounting for all extractive activities, including development and production, and whether primary users of financial statements are getting all of the information that they need to make decisions about entities with extractive activities. We also think it is important to note that we have not considered the relative merits of the feedback provided and whether we think this provides evidence that there is a problem that needs to be addressed by standard setting. Consequently, this paper is really only a summary of the feedback from the additional outreach. We will, at a later date, provide the board with an analysis of this feedback, but we think this will be helpful for the board when it decides the scope of the research project to replace or amend IFRS 6. Paragraphs 16 to 18 summarize the feedback in relation to the potential scope of a research project. In particular, we note that in line with the feedback to the discussion paper and the feedback from outreach activities performed in 2018 and early 2019, there continue to be mixed views about the potential scope of a research project to replace or amend IFRS 6. For example, many respondents think the scope should be expanded to address accounting for all extractive activities, not only exploration and evaluation activities, as currently addressed by IFRS 6. In fact, it's probably worth noting that this option had more support than we had noted previously from our previous outreach. Some respondents think that the board should undertake a research project only on the activities addressed by IFRS 6. Some respondents think that the scope should be expanded to also address non-IFRS information, such as the disclosure of reserve and resource information. And finally, a few respondents think that there is no need for a project because IFRS 6 is working as intended. Paragraphs 19 to 43 summarize the feedback about applying IFRS standards to all extractive activities. Most respondents provided feedback about application challenges arising applying IFRS 6 and other IFRS standards, which in their view are particularly difficult for entities with extractive activities. Respondents also provided comments on other application challenges, which in their view are unique to entities in the extractives industry, and are not specifically addressed in IFRS standards. However, again, we think it is important to note that some respondents do not expect standard setting activity as a result of these challenges, and were simply highlighting those IFRS standards they find challenging to apply in response to the questions we asked. Some other respondents, though, thought the board should provide additional guidance on some of these topics, either in the applicable standards themselves, in IFRS 6, in a separate extractive activity standard, or in one case, a new standard for the topic itself. As mentioned in paragraph 15, analysis of this feedback will be required to determine the nature and extent of these application challenges, whether they are unique to extractive activities, and whether there is evidence that there is a problem that does need to be addressed by standard setting. Paragraphs 44 to 50 summarise the feedback in relation to jurisdictional reserve and resource reporting requirements. In particular, we note that there appear to be different requirements in each jurisdiction for both the reserve and resource classification system entities should apply and the disclosure of reserve and resource information. However, feedback also indicates that these classification systems are predominantly based on the globally recognised classification systems established by the Committee for Minerals Reserves International Reporting Standards and the Petroleum Resource Management System. Paragraphs 51 to 54 summarise feedback about other information that entities disclose that is not currently required by IFRS standards. Many respondents, particularly preparers, noted that voluntary disclosures, in addition to those required by IFRS standards, are common in the extractives industry. These respondents said that, in their view, the extractives industry focuses on non-GAAP and cash measures because these provide more useful information to users of their financial statements. Paragraphs 55 to 56 summarise other feedback about other industries which have been established since 2010, which a few respondents think the board should consider including in the scope of extractive activities, and developments in the extractives industry that a few respondents thought the board should be made aware of. So with that, I will hand over to the board and just ask if you have any questions or comments on the feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, Siobhan. Anne.
Thanks, Hans. Thanks, Siobhan and Tim. First, a comment on the first paper, 19, and then a question on 19A. So in relation to 19, I appreciate what you've got in paragraph 12, setting out the proposal and the your proposal for next steps. And I think that's particularly important because of the complexity of this topic. So you're going to bring us pieces of information. I think that's important and that will help us. In relation to 19A, as I read this summary, I was thinking about reasons behind the different responses that we've got. So the initial outreach went to the entities that were involved in the 2010 DP. And then you've said in the paper that subsequently you did further outreach and that the tone of responses seemed to change and you seem to get some different feedback. So I know this is just a summary, but as I read that, it did make a question that I'd like to ask you, whether you feel that the feedback that you've been receiving somehow differs depending on the maturity or the comprehensiveness of the accounting system. So what I mean by that is around the capital market infrastructure around the reporting for the extractive activity companies. So if we look at this feedback, we can see that for some entities in extractive activities, they've got many questions about things that are not covered by the IFRS literature, and they have issues applying IFRS literature when it exists. But then on the other hand, we've got entities that say they're not troubled, that they can get the they're not troubled preparing, and they can, investors can get the information they need. So I just wonder if it's institutional differences that are driving some of the responses we're getting, and those institutional differences reflect the secondary sources of information that are in place. And I just wonder if staff can bear that in mind when they're bringing us this feedback, so just to help us make more sense of the feedback that we're getting. Thank you.
So just in response to your question, I guess the feedback that we have received does indicate initially that the oil and gas industry is in, I guess, a much more mature industry as compared to minerals. So more commonly, the oil and gas industry is more concerned with other application challenges that don't relate so much to IFRS 6. But however, on then the other end, when we're looking at minerals, which is arguably still quite a young industry that's still developing, they do have concerns about IFRS 6, and they ask for a lot more guidance and clarifications about IFRS 6.
Okay. Mary?
Thanks, Hans, and thanks, Siobhan and Tim. I have a few comments, and I was going to say reactions to the paper, but on the basis that this was a summary, I guess I'm actually just exposing maybe some of the assumptions that I'm coming into this with and warning you about those. The bigger observation in terms of thinking about how you bring things to us is I think it would be helpful to think explicitly about how this fits in with our agenda consultation plan. And the reason I say that is, it's our previous agenda consultation that put this project on the research agenda. I'm not calling that into question. I think what we expect to find out of this phase is there a financial reporting problem? Can we address that problem? And if so, how big a project is it? Which issues would we address, and maybe how might we address them? But what we will not get from consulting only on those issues for this project is how our total stakeholder community prioritizes doing whatever comes out of answering those questions and consulting on those questions versus other things that we might want to work on. I'm not asking for your reaction today. But I think in terms of, as Anne said, looking at paper 19, what the next steps are and what you're bringing us, I think thinking explicitly about that and what information we expect to have at the time we go out with the agenda consultation would be quite helpful. So that's one observation. Now, a second, and this is where maybe it's more revealing assumptions that I have. In terms of broadening to a wider range of activities of an extractive entity, a number of the issues that were raised, I agree, are perhaps more prevalent in extractive industries, but I really didn't see any that were unique to extractive industries. So I think we have to be quite cautious about that. I mean, I think the point about complex structures, some of these are massive, massive projects. So not surprising that it's not only significant financing, but it's also partnering to share risks, and that produces complex arrangements, and complex arrangements are hard to account for. There are a number of challenges figuring out what standards apply, and then there are a number of quite significant both judgments and estimates that have to be made. And we can't and we shouldn't be trying to dumb down complex arrangements, but they are not unique to this industry. So I think we have to be realistic that if we decide to do something new in that area, it would apply across a much wider range of entities. At least that's my assumption until we get evidence to the contrary. And I think we also have to be careful about buying into the statement that there are many issues that are not addressed in IFRS standards. I think it's true that there are many specific application questions that, when people can't look up, how do I deal with X issue? And, we've had some of those come to Interpretation Committee in the past, whether it's the issue we had recently about lease agreements and joint arrangements, or whether it was with the overlift and underlift, or going all the way back to the interpretation about stages of a mine. But I think it's not that they're outside the scope of existing standards. It's just that there's not specific guidance that says this is how you do it. And I think, as in general, we are cautious about going too far into the detail other than examples. So if you can do any kind of segregation between these are ones that really ask questions of principle, or these are ones that really talk about the interaction of a number of standards versus one standard, I think that would be helpful, because in terms of thinking which do we think we really need to address. And then I'd also say that there are one or two things in here, and I'm going to use I think it's paragraph 40 about provisions as an example, or at least 40B in terms of the lack of consistency in discount rates is something that I think we are planning to address in our follow-up work on IS 37. So, it's, and no ding to anybody who gave us that comment, because I think that probably predated decisions that the board made. And then I guess the last thing I'll say is, in terms of reserve disclosures, and this is a place that I get really torn. On the one hand, I understand the significance of that information to a user of financial statements. On the other hand, And I also see that some of that information may flow in indirectly as an input to some financial reporting issues. But the other hand is trying to reconcile or come to common agreement about disclosures that are both critical and long-established practices for something that's outside the financial statements is a massive piece of work. And I think one of the first things we'd have to do is start talking with market regulators and see what kind of appetite they have for trying to reconcile, different and in some cases conflicting requirements that may be written into legislation in some countries. Because if they don't have an appetite for prioritizing that, then I think the level of difficulty is not just the normal consensus building on top of understanding information needs, thinking about cost benefit, but it's another quite significant layer of complexity. So I think we'd have to take that in as a thought about the cost of a project and whether it is really something that we are best suited to drive. And one question might be, has anybody who's a user who's frustrated, have any user groups tried to talk to market regulators about consistency of information if they think it's such a critical area? So those are some reactions, and I both hope and expect that the rest of the papers you do will be as clear and well thought through as this, because it really did feel like you wrangled an awful lot of information very clearly. So thank you.
Nick?
Thanks, Hans. And thanks to the staff. Like Mary, I think this was a very good summary of the issues. I've got a few observations and then one question. My overall impression from the paper was that here we are dealing perhaps with a wide range of disparate application issues from preparers. There seems to be no consistency, but lots of individual or application issues that trouble a small number of preparers, but certainly no consensus amongst that group in terms of what we should be doing. There are a couple of other comments in the paper that I found particularly telling. So in paragraph 17, you describe one respondent as observing that there's no correlation between the cost and value of explanation expenditure. And I think that's part of the issue that we face here. Many of the requests are around accounting for explanation expenditure, but really that doesn't move the needle for most investors in terms of the outcome they're going to face. And the second comments I found particularly interesting were around the information that preparers are being asked for by users, and that is typically non-GAAP information, free cash flow, for instance, you mentioned reserves and resources. My question is, was it challenging to engage users in the work we've done here? I was interested to note that we only had two users in our response or in our outreach here, and I wasn't sure why that was.
Siobhan, you want to answer that question?
Yep. So I think, and Tim will correct me if I'm wrong, we did find it, at this stage of the project, a little bit harder to engage with users of financial statements, because this is quite a specific industry to look into. And I guess the time we were looking for feedback wasn't exactly the best time for them to respond to us either. So they haven't really got, a good level of engagement with the project yet, just because we are in the initial stages of the project and we haven't quite decided what the scope of the project is going to be.
I was just going to
quickly add to that. I mean, I think Siobhan was right. I mean, we have had a few one-to-ones with users, specialist users, one in this batch of feedback and some previously. And in this batch of feedback, one of the national standard setters that helped had done a survey for their user community and a survey for their preparer community as well. So that's where some of that information was coming from. But we have, as you sort of picked up in terms of the paper, we have also in the outreach, when we've spoken to preparers, we have tried to sort of gather some insight into users' use of their information by asking them the questions of what are users asking you for that isn't a part of your financial statement information, what's the additional information. And we have, in terms of the questions we've been asking them, is also looking at other aspects of the information that users find interesting, and an exploration and evaluation expenditure, whether they're asking questions specifically about that. So those are some additional insight that we've had from users. But and it's an important part of the project. As much as possible, we need to work out what the problem here is that we're trying to solve, and users are obviously a very important part of that. But the information that we are getting from users is giving us some indications into that. And you know, when we come back with the scoping discussion, we'll be able to try to explore that a little bit more. But obviously, we'll try to hopefully reach out to more users in the interim period as to get as much information as we possibly can.
I think that's absolutely critical. I mean, we can find a better time to engage with them, but particularly at this stage of the project, when we're trying to scope and work out what the accounting problem is here. And I think that is an issue that we haven't really managed to pinpoint a particular issue yet or set of issues. I think we need that engagement or more of it. So I encourage you in your endeavours there. Thank you.
Chen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. First of all, thank you. This is a very good paper. I think the report summarizes the feedback the staff received, and very informative and comprehensive, very useful. Secondly, I have a couple of comments. The first, I noticed that it seemed that during this round of outreach, more and more respondents support that the scope of the project should cover all extractive activities, not only limited to the exploration and the evaluation activities, but also to cover development and production activities. I think this is a new message we received, but I look at the next step plan, when we included in the agenda paper 19, it seems that we still focus on exploration and evaluation activities. I'm wondering whether in the future we are going to do some separate research in this area and put forward the findings and the what kind of proposal we are going to have. So this is one question. Second, I appreciate that even for some stakeholders, they still think that we are favored to using or simply update IFI 6, but the challenges and the issues identified in paragraph 24 of those concerns and the challenges of applying IFI 6, I feel very useful, particularly the issue about unit of account. Under existing IFI 6, it's not clear. So in practice, there are a lot of divergences. Practice, I think it's very important to address what's accounting for exploration, evaluation, those expenditures, whether they are building on single wheels or group of wheels, or you know, oil and gas field, something like that. Based on my feedback I got when I do outreach, it seems that in practice, there are different versions of, you know, unit of account in place. So I think these kind of issues identified, hopefully we can address in the future in our project. Another thing is about disclosure, and I think Nick already mentioned a little bit. Actually, it's about the boundary of financial statement and the other report. Nick mentioned something, but one thing I would like to comment on about the reserve the resources report. Some stakeholders believe that it should not be included in the financial statement. Some believe they should be included in the financial statement. But I think reserve and resource information is really useful for users. Actually, this is for many companies in activities. That is the most important asset resources. They should be disclosed to the users. So I, from my point of view, I always think that is very important information. Should be included in financial statement, and should be, you know, assurance by auditors something in certain extent. And also some stakeholders also told us that is not only relevant related to the disclosure, it's also related to the recognition and the measurement. And for example, impairment, depreciation, sometimes based on those reserves and resources, you know, proved or identified. So I think we should also explore and at least including our research, you know, scope to try to do some research on that and how to explore those issues and give some proposed recommendation area.
Okay. Rika. No, sorry. Tom first.
Okay, thank you. I just want to pick up something that Mary said. I'll start with, but the paper is called Extractive Activities, and it's not called Extractive Industry. So one of the things we have to be very careful here is in general, we tend to focus on the activity. I think we did that in the insurance standard. In rate regulated, we're not doing an industry standard. We're focusing on a particular asset, rate regulated assets and liabilities. So one thing we have to decide as we go down is, do we want to sort of keep it on extractive activities? I think we do, but we should be cautious in that. So then it was something Mary said, and with that context, if we think about these, the industry will have a whole series of problems. And in paragraph 41, for example, they use the word unique and not addressed by IFRS standards. And I think Mary said more prevalent, I think, if I heard her correctly, would be a better word. And so where it's more prevalent and not unique, in some sense, we should probably be thinking about a standard that helps that industry, but would also cover those kinds of problems in other industries. So, for example, I think a lot of the ones that are presented are where you have some kind of bilateral risk sharing that makes it more optimal for both groups, and they ultimately share the output. And so do those sorts of things arise in other industries as well? And is that where the current standards, do they handle risk sharing adequately? And so do we have a generic standard potentially, but which would be particularly helpful to this industry? Where it's particularly unique, I think then you could still keep it in activities. For example, the issue of whether we do reserve and resource reporting. So I think you could have things that are unique, but again, I'd probably still stick it on the activity. So I guess that would be my biggest comment going through, is where we have a problem that is prevalent in the industry, but also exists elsewhere, we should be thinking about it as a counting problem as opposed to an extractive industry problem.
Sorry, I had to connect my battery. Anne, please, do you want to come back in?
Yes, thanks, Hans. I wanted to comment again on resources and reserves, which is a very challenging area. When I was thinking about it today, I was wondering if there are things we can learn from primary financial statements, and where we started out with non-GAAP and how we ended up with management performance measures. Because there are some things about the disclosures of resources and reserves which are outside the financial statements and indeed are not subject to accounting standards. But there were some elements about, as I thought about PFS and non-GAAP, and there were three things. Firstly, with non-GAAP, it was regulated in some countries but not others. So there was variability in regulation for IFRS reporters, and that was important to us. Secondly, there was a close relationship between the non-GAAP reporting and subtotals or totals in IFRS. So there was a relationship between the other disclosure and financial reporting. And thirdly, it was important information for users. So I thought about those three things, and I thought that there might be some way for us to learn from how we approach those three issues as we think about resources and reserves. So I just wanted to share that with Siobhan and Tim, because we hear so many mixed things about resources and reserves, and it's a very difficult area and it's very complicated. And I thought, what's a way we could approach it and what guidance could we have? And so I just wanted to suggest that, whether ask you, don't have to reply now, but in terms of, as we think about it, whether we can learn something from what we've learned in primary financial statements and how we've approached non-GAAP. Thank you.
Very good suggestion. Daryl.
Thanks, Hans. A couple of things. Firstly, I'd like to echo Mary's comment earlier, or compliment earlier to staff, in terms of pulling everything together in what is quite a complex environment out there, pulling it together in the paper for us. But I'd also like to compliment staff on the effort that you have put into the outreach activities over the last 6 odd months. And perhaps to talk a little bit about personal experience on this one, I've certainly been finding it quite difficult to mobilize preparers and others' interest in the project. And I think, Nick, this might come back a little bit to your question. The impression I'm getting is that people have been perhaps a little bit burnt by false starts that we've had in the past on this project. And so it's taken a while for the various stakeholders in the industry to actually engage, and it's taken quite a lot of pushing from the staff level to get these conversations going, to get the interactions going. But that said, I think that it shows up in the paper. We're now starting to see more input. We're starting to see a greater interest in the project. And I think these outputs that we're starting to get now, and as the process goes forward over the next couple of months, are going to be really critical in thinking about how we determine the direction forward. I think it's also worth bearing in mind that some of the diversity we're seeing in the views expressed in terms of way forward is arising because of the diversity in practice right now. So everybody's got very different starting points. There's different practices and jurisdictions. People have settled into jurisdictional specific approaches, including the reserves and stuff that Anne was talking about. And so there's a little bit of inertia that we've got to overcome and a little bit of diversity in terms of the direction people think about going forward. I hadn't thought about this until Mary mentioned it earlier, but I think it is a bit of a shame that this project and the timeline of this project is going to interact a little bit with the agenda consultation. And I think it's important that when the board gets to think about the agenda consultation, we think very hard about all the work that we have done to date on this project over the last run with it, and that we consider the outcomes of that work before perhaps diving too deeply into a clean agenda consultation type approach. There's a lot of sunk costs, if you like, in the processes we've had up to this point. Thanks, Hans.
Okay. Rika.
Thank you, Hans. Thank you for staff for preparing a very good summary about what we need to discuss further in the future. And then I think what I want staff to consider further about is the reason of the diversity in accounting policies, especially why they have a different accounting policy. I mean, if that is the reason, the diversity is kind of the diversity in entities' operation and what type of the transaction they are doing, that might be a reason to create a diversity. But if they are doing exact same or almost same economic substance, but still they have the different accounting policy, that kind of things we need to tackle with. So I want to see, I understand that is not easy thing to get the information through the outreach, but there's some the difference, distinction between the same transaction treated a different way and the different transaction in applying the different accounting policy. So I want to see in that way in the future. That will help me a lot. Thank you.
Mary wanted to come back in.
Yeah, if I could on just 2 points. One is, Jinjiao, you were talking, you were flagging up, highlighting that the new data we seem to have is more appetite for a broader scope, and conscious of Tom's reminder about even if it's a broader scope of extractive activities rather than extractive entities. I guess on that point, I wanted to say it would be very helpful if the staff, when analyzing those those requests for thinking about a broader range of activities to be covered, whether they're asking about something that in the staff's initial analysis is truly unique to extractive, such as the reserves issue, or whether it really is a question for application of application guidance on IFRS standards, how they apply to the two fact patterns typically encountered in the industry, and kind of doing an assessment of what the pros and cons would be of giving specific guidance there. So especially making that initial cut between yes, it is unique, or it's a frequently occurring application question would be helpful to me in terms of assessing that overall slight shift in mood. The second thing is going back to Anne's point about lessons that we learned from primary financial statements. One is to be targeted. One of the lessons is to be targeted. You know, we heard a lot and thought a lot in the early days about non-GAAP measures, alternative performance measures, et cetera. And we ended up focusing in our ED on primary financial statements, ended up focusing on subtotals as the issue where the cost-benefit calculation was in line for us to try and act and do something and address a chunk of concerns, but may, even if it didn't address all the concerns. And so one of the things we learned from PFS was how to be targeted in our response, especially when going into new areas. And one thing that strikes me in particular, thinking about that lesson with respect to the reserves disclosure, is a potential targeted response, and I'm not advocating this, I'm just saying possible, might be for reserve information that interacts with as an input to financial statements. Let's say if there's any kind of unit of production type calculation. And I think then the question I'd have for users of financial statements is whether it's more important to be consistent across entities, which means that some entities may have to do a calculation only for the input purposes, or whether it's more important for an entity to have consistency within its financial statements, because I'd presume that if you're calculating reserves in a certain way and reserves are an input to a financial reporting measure, then you'd probably be doing something that's consistent with how you calculate reserves, and whether it's more important that you have consistency within that entity's financial reporting versus comparability across entities. I'm not advocating at this point that we should do any of those, but that's just an example of taking the primary financial statements lesson about being targeted in what we're trying to do, rather than only looking at it's the big issue, you know, in its entirety, and then thinking about the kind of questions we could ask. So thanks.
Are there any more questions, comments? If not, then we thank the staff for an excellent paper and a good discussion. So we are done for today. And we'll see each other tomorrow for the final day of our deliberations. Thank you.